You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, hands-on work has been making a comeback lately, and that's true for the traditional craft of sign painting. We'll talk to a Wisconsin artist who's been hand-lettering doors, park benches, brick walls, cars, and more since 1980. Now, there are lots of reasons why people love to read, and plenty of chances to fall out of the habit of reading, too. Maybe we feel too busy with work or family. Maybe we haven't been regular readers since leaving school. During the pandemic, it seems like there were two groups of readers that emerged. People who were able to hunker down and fly through their must-read lists, and those who felt unable to focus or distracted and had a tough time picking up a book. If you're in that second group, or if it's been years since you got through a book, our next guest has some advice and recommendations to help us get back into reading. Margaret H. Willison is a librarian and culture writer based in Boston. She's one half of the Two Bossy Dames newsletter, one third of the Appointment Television podcast, and appears as a regular on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. We talked with her back in March. Here's that conversation. Well, I described two different types of people there, Margaret. People have read a lot during the pandemic. People have had trouble concentrating during the pandemic. I'll confess, I'm both of those people. I've been through both of those stages in the last year. What are you hearing from the reading community that you interact with?
The vast majority of the people I interact with are in the cannot read at all category, just totally fried focus. And I'm certainly in that group. I got one book for Christmas that I managed to read in like a day, and my brain has never felt better. It was so, like being able to drink a glass of water after walking in the desert for 40 days.
Yeah, I have found when I'm in those stages where I just can't focus reading, when I am able to make myself do it, and often it involves turning off a computer and hiding a phone or something like that. When I've been in those stages and I do read, I feel way better about life. Like it's something I've really missed when I make the time to do it.
Yeah, the churn of news is so addictive right now and has been so addictive, I think, for all of us for the last 4 years and more. But you only actually learn new things so often, you know? Like you feel like you need to see every single thing that comes along down the line. But you're not actually getting very much information from it. And your health is definitely better if you unplug for a second and just exist in the moment you're in.
Now, if somebody says to you, Margaret, this is me, I want to get back to reading again, whether it's, you know, during the pandemic or it's someone who loved reading as a kid but lost the habit, I don't know, what do you suggest to them as ways to start breaking the ice and getting back into it?
So one of the things that I think shifts our relationship to reading as we get older is that it stops being an entertainment activity and it shifts into being a prestige activity, right? So you don't necessarily go to the bookstore and buy the book you think you won't be able to put down, buy the book that is just going to completely absorb your attention. You know, you buy the book that you just heard Terry Gross interview the author of, you know, and you buy the book you think you'll want to talk about at a dinner party. And I don't want to say that those books cannot be compulsively readable experiences, because frequently they can be. Because you're using a model that isn't centered on your own taste, which could be, you know, World War II pilots' memoirs, you know, or it could be, as it often is with me, romance novels set in 19th century England. Because you're not attached to your own taste in this space and instead you're pursuing something else, the odds that you're going to find something that you don't really click with are higher. And I think the trick is to figure out what it is you like in media generally. You know, what is it that makes a TV show something you binge on Netflix? What is it that makes you sit up and pay attention in a movie? And talk to somebody, a bookseller or a librarian, to see if they can help you pinpoint what you love and find versions of it in books.
And Margaret, I know we've had conversations on this network over the years, you know, when e-readers came in, does reading an electronic book really count? And then audiobooks, does reading an audiobook really count as reading? If I'm reading stuff I've read by you, right? Yeah, it all counts, right? The mode isn't really the important thing.
Anybody who tells you mode delegitimizes your reading can go jump in a lake. That's my heartfelt opinion.
And for audiobooks. Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say, I mean, an audiobook is it is a different cognitive experience than reading, absolutely. But it is a profound, immersive experience with a narrative. And it can also give you a sense of the quality of the person's writing even better than a written thing can. Because to be translatable to a vocal performance, right, and not just words on a page, shows like remarkable dexterousness, both on the part of the narrator and on the part of the reader. So it's a wonderful experience of a narrative, and it can be a wonderful way to experience the imagistic quality certain writers have. So for some books, I'd honestly recommend it as a way to experience the narrative the author has created over merely reading it in a book.
Talking to Margaret H. Willison, librarian and culture writer based in Boston. She is giving us some advice, some inspiration to get into reading, get back into reading, especially after a tough year where, as we've heard, a lot of people had a hard time sitting down and concentrating on a book. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What has been your reading experience over the last year or so? Reading more, reading less? Bursts of both, like me. Call 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Amber is with us in Green Bay. Amber, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's been your reading story, Amber?
I'm a dyslexic child. I hated reading as a kid. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, I started challenging myself. And in 2020, I actually read or listened to 211 books.
What?
Wow.
Okay. You're working in bulk there, Amber. What was it that, what did you do to go from being a dyslexic kid who hated reading to reading, 200 books plus in a year? What got you in the door there?
Audible and Libby, hands okay. down. Being able to listen to a book versus having to slog through reading it.
Awesome. Do you have any favorite audiobooks to recommend, Amber, before we let you go?
The Outlander series is amazing. Uh-huh. And I just read Sea Monster. It's one of the new Pulitzer Prize winners. It was
Fantastic.
Really good.
Amber, thank you so much for sharing that story. Margaret, pretty cool story.
Incredibly cool story. And just like such a clear demonstration of what we lose when we try to police the boundaries of what counts as reading.
Thank you so much, Amber, for sharing that at 800-642-1234. Do you have, Margaret, some favorite audiobooks that you would recommend as audiobook experiences in particular?
Yeah, I do have some favorites. So I studied 19th century literature in college, and one of the nice things is you can get classic novels for less money because they're out of copyright. And there is a particularly remarkable a version of Elizabeth Gaskell's novel Wives and Daughters, narrated by Prunella Scales, who is a stage actress and a small-time sitcom star in the UK that is just, like, I've listened to it. It's 26 hours long, and I've listened to it probably 5 times, like, conservatively. And similarly, the Sherlock Holmes stories are incredible in audio because they've got such good rise and fall in the action. And there is a version narrated by a narrator named Simon Vance that is remarkable, that is the complete works of Sherlock Holmes. So all 4 novels and all of the short stories. And I have also listened to that, which is, I think, 80 hours long, like 3 to 4 times through. I use it to fall asleep at night.
There is something magical about whether it's a print book or e-version or audiobook, like when you're in a good thing. And you realize you've got tons of it left, whether it's a long series or, you got hours and hours of entertainment
totally.
Ahead of you. That's a great discovery.
Yeah, almost nothing better than that.
We asked our listeners on the Ideas Network Facebook page to weigh in. Bev said it's hard to suggest books without knowing a person's interests. She suggests talking to your library staff,
share
your interests, and they can offer suggestions. I happen to have married into the library profession. And I know librarians love this. The if you like blank, check out blank. Can you talk about that process a little bit?
Well, it's what I was talking about at the early part of the show, which is that so much of our recommending process, if you aren't trained in it, is not based on individual taste, right? But it's based on decentralized ideas of prestige or quality separate from taste. And to the extent that quality exists separate from individual taste, one, it's a frequently problematic category, right? It's frequently kind of tied up in old-fashioned, racist, classist, sexist ideas about what counts as serious literature and what doesn't. So there's that. And then the other thing is, it's like, the trick is not just finding what is quality, but it's finding what's quality that is really going to sing for you. And so maybe I'm really loving, you know, the show Sex Education on Netflix. Frankly, I am. It's a great show. But it's not going to be to everyone's taste. Not everybody likes narratives about teenagers. Some people have a hard time taking things with deeply saturated color palettes seriously. And equally, lots of people love Ozark. And it is never going to be for me because it is just, it's dingy. It feels narratively and visually dingy to me. And I just don't gravitate towards it. It does not make my brain light up with joy. And that's what you get when you talk with somebody about what their personal taste is like, and when you pull out the things that really speak to them and can connect it to other media in different spaces. You know, you find the stuff that really sings for a person.
We're listening back to a conversation with Margaret Willison, librarian and culture writer. We're talking about how to get back into reading after taking a break, whether it's been years since you picked up a book or if you've noticed yourself getting out of the habit more recently. We'll hear more of that conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're listening back to a conversation with Margaret H. Willison, librarian, writer, and regular on NPR Pop Culture Happy Hour. We're talking about how to get back into reading after some time off, even if that's been since you were in school. You can hone in on a particular genre or get some recommendations like we're hearing right now. There are also apps and services out there to help us discover new books. We heard about one of those from a Central Time listener, Michael in Kaukauna. Here's what he had to say.
Hello. Have you heard of a thing called LibriVox? It's a free service where they have volunteers reading public domain books. And several readers you can pick from, the voice that you like. And it's a great resource, especially in a time of pandemic where people are laid off and don't have resources to pay.
LibriVox. I'm looking at it online, LibriVox. That sounds like a great service. I'll also put in a plug for Bard. If you have a visual impairment of any sort, it's been a lifesaver for my dad. Sources of great audiobooks, Margaret. I hadn't heard of this LibriVox.
My mom is a huge fan of LibriVox. She's always recommending different readers to me on it. So I guess, folks, if you want some tips, tweet at me and I'll source them from my mother.
Fantastic. Michael, thank you for sharing that. Uh-oh, Michelle Good, our technical director, reminds me, Chapter a Day here on the Ideas Network, a great source of some wonderful audiobooks, too, with fantastic readers. Let's go to Zachary now in Waukesha. Zachary, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Zachary?
I recently, for the first time, joined a book club, and in 2020, in a virtual format through an online platform called Book Clubs with a Z. It helps me connect with other alumni, actually from my alma mater, Carroll University in Waukesha, to be able to, you know, plan our upcoming discussions, vote on upcoming reads, and then schedule things through Zoom to chat virtually. Our last one actually had people from Arizona, the Carolinas, Minnesota, and Wisconsin all tuning in together, reading the same stories over the month.
And Zachary, how has it been doing that? Because you think of book clubs, you think you get together at somebody's house. How has it been doing them online?
Actually, really nice. I think just the concept of book clubs has kept me really accountable for the first time ever. I normally read in bed at night and typically find myself falling asleep, but I know when I have an upcoming book club meeting, it kind of forces me in that last week to get them done, knowing that we're going to have a lot of really really good content to discuss together.
Fantastic, Zachary. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Margaret, I've never done a book club. What are your thoughts?
I'm impressed with Zachary. I'm so glad it works for him. I am unbook clubbable. Like, as soon as reading becomes assigned, I become allergic to it.
Yeah.
I have this "you're not my mom" response, even if it's a book I'd otherwise love. So, and then my other problem with book clubs is I don't care, or I care more than can be sustained by like casual chit chat over wine about my books. And so like I would be a nightmare member of a book club. I would not read the book for months. And then one time I would read the book and I would come in and somebody would make a comment and it'd be like, excuse me, you have not quoted that correctly. If we could all flip to page 87, we can source the quote a little more exactly. I think you'll find you're reading it wrong.
Uh-oh.
Real bad scene for me. But if it works for you, congratulations. Something I've found that's really effective is a reading club instead of a book club, where people can be reading anything they want to. It doesn't have to be the same book, but you still get together with other people who have similar ways of reading to you. And you talk about the different things that you're reading at the moment in time, what you're liking about them. You try and figure out the common threads between them. So if, like me, you are unbook clubbable, but you are looking for a communal experience centered on reading, a reading club rather than a book club might be something to try.
Zachary, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking about reading, how to get into it, how to get back into it with Margaret H. Wilson, librarian and culture writer. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Got a few minutes and a line is open up for you. You can also comment on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Margaret, I wanted to talk about branching out and trying new things in the reading world and not pursuing our same taste. This is on my mind because my parents were raving about Pride and Prejudice, which I'd never read. And I was like, I don't know if that's really my thing. And I got it from the library and I stayed up past my bedtime reading and it was so darn good.
Oh,
and now
Rob,
actually Sense and Sensibility is waiting for me at the library now. And it only took me, I'm not going to say how many decades of not enjoying that book. How do we explore new things in a rewarding way?
Well, Rob, just fun fact, I'm going to be teaching an online class on Emma in a few weeks. So your timing is perfect in getting into Austin, in my opinion. What I think is great is if you have someone in your life whose taste you trust, but who likes things in the category you're sort of trying to hook your way into. So I, for example, I really can't do horror. I'm anxious enough as is, like I don't need fictional anxiety created for me.
Fair.
However, my roommate, Mallory, is a huge horror fan. And in other genres, we have very aligned tastes, and she seems to understand what I like. And so she's been really, really great at sort of pointing me in the direction of things that are going to give me a taste of that genre, but that are still going to be working within the aspects of media that I like, that are going to be telling stories in a way I gravitate towards or centered on characters I find particularly appealing. And so I think that's really your big, big trick, is sort of talk with people whose taste you trust, who understand your taste, and see if they can help you identify good bridge books into new genres and new spaces.
What's a horror book that a non-horror reader really likes?
Horror is probably putting it a little bit too strongly, but it's a very, very spooky ghost story that I really enjoyed called A Certain Slant of Light by Lauren Whitcomb.
Okay. I'll maybe check that out. Time for one more caller. Nancy is with us in Milwaukee. Nancy, hello. Oh, we lost Nancy. Oh, no. Let's
horror
see.
Horror movie in of itself.
Our producer says Nancy's been a big reader since age 3. Nancy says people just need to walk through a library to love books. Well, that's been harder to do. You can't, only now are we able to walk into a library and browse or a bookstore or what have you. I don't. How much has that, do you think, interfered with our reading, Margaret, not being able to just browse a shelf?
I think that has definitely interfered with our reading, because so much of the joy in reading comes from serendipitous discovery. Like, I think for people my age, I'm 35, like a major, major joyous memory are like the scholastic book fairs that would come to your school, where they would just be sort of like laid out on tables all over your gym and you could just go around and pick things up and look at things. And something about seeing materials in that sort of unhierarchical way, right? Where a library is especially good because it's not just brand new books, right? It's books from all throughout time, and it's zero risk, right? You can just take it home for completely free. That said, your libraries probably have incredible, incredible digital resources available, and you should definitely be taking a look. You can get a lot of audiobooks and a lot of ebooks that way. And you could possibly make something like the serendipitous experience of browsing a physical store by just going to your social networks and saying, you know, who has a favorite childhood book they think I should read? You know, setting up a trade system with other friends who want to try some new stuff and have some serendipitous experiences and sort of seeing how that works for you.
All right, Margaret, I got to ask, what book is in your hands or your ears these days, or what's next on your shelf? You can pick one.
Well, here's what I would say. I think in Wisconsin, you guys still get a little bit of snow this time of year. I know certainly in Boston we do, which means that my most popular recommendation, I'd say kind of all time, is a book called Bellwether Rhapsody by an author, Kate Raculia, R-A-C-C-U-L-I-A. And it is about a bunch of music-obsessed teenagers at a weekend musical festival who get snowed in a giant decaying hotel in the Catskills. And on what turns out to be the weekend anniversary of a double murder that happened there, and one of the people goes missing, and you're following a bunch of different characters of a bunch of different ages through this very evocative setting. And it is just totally engrossing and funny and suspenseful and delightful. And if you are a person who loved the Westing Game when you were little, you really owe it to yourself to try this one out.
And the title again?
Bellwether Rhapsody.
Bellwether Rhapsody. A lot of twists and turns, yes, just in the description. Margaret, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Rob. Thank you for having me.
That was Margaret H. Willison, librarian who co-authors the Two Bossy Dames newsletter and appears on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. We talked to her back in March, hence the snow, about how to get back into reading if we've had trouble getting through a book lately or finding something that grabs our interest. Coming up, we'll talk to a Wisconsin artist who's been working to keep the art of traditional sign painting alive since 1980. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, it's taken 18 years, but the U.S. combat mission in Iraq is ending, and there's a big contrast with what's happening in Afghanistan. U.S. troops will remain in Iraq to train and advise. Jen White looks at how America's new role in both countries will play out here and around the world. That's today at 6 on 1A+. Now, hand painting has made a comeback in many cities throughout Wisconsin in recent years, with lots of new murals and large-scale artworks popping up. Our next guest also specializes in hand painting, and you might see his work on storefronts and cars near you. Jeff Williams of The King of Paint has been practicing the craft of traditional sign painting since 1980. He offers hand lettering, pinstriping, and gold leaf gilding out of his shop based in St. Francis. Jeff, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Can you tell us about traditional hand sign painting versus what we might see kind of mass produced in a print shop these days?
Well, I mean, with the mass of the artwork that you see out on the streets nowadays is all done computerized. It's a digital type of thing. And, I kind of look at it like it's a cookie cutter type of thing, because you can, if you have a computer with, 3,000 fonts in it, well, you can just choose anything you want, where being a traditional sign painter, it's the letters that you have inside of you and how you lay things out, and, which was what I was, drawn to at an early age.
How did you get started in sign painting?
Well, at a very early age, my dad would take me to the racetrack, and we would see these cars, racing in circles or the drag strip. And, I started to notice that, they just really looked, everything was different, the different colors they would use. And not only that, but that they were hand laid out. And I started to notice that, you know, some cars may look kind of have similar things, you know, that would, of course, would be from a certain sign painter, where another car would be that's done by another sign painter. It's kind of like a like somebody's signature. Everybody has their own touch to it.
And how about your first jobs? Were you good at it when you first started?
Oh, I was horrible, for crying out loud. You know, but it was just to have the, you know, compassion to want to copy or duplicate, you know, something that was, you know, that you had seen that had inspired you, always kept you, you know, or kept me, you know, looking for that next job and how to improve it and make a better layout or make it read better or colors or whatever it is.
Now, you mentioned you get to invent your own font basically with every job. How do you work with, say, a client to say, this is what we want these letters to look like?
Well, you know, every job, of course, is different, but you got to keep in mind, you know, whether, you know, you have a sign that is going to be on the side of a roadway and you really only have, you know, say, 3 seconds to read the information on this sign, you have to make it bold and very easy to read versus a sign that you might be able to walk up to, you know, that would be on a sidewalk for a storefront or something where you can walk up to it and actually take your time and look at it. You know, you kind of have a different approach to layout. Now, so, you know, everything's different.
I love that you're inspired by watching race cars. A lot of kids would get excited about the cars. You got inspired by the design, and now you do designs on cars. What goes into pinstriping or other designs that you'd put on a car?
Well, you know, as far as like pinstriping goes, you know, I kind of read the car to look at it, you know, whether it may be like, so let's just say, you know, somebody just brought me a brand new, you know, Mercedes Benz or something like that, you know, or a brand new Cadillac. You know, we would want to go with more of a traditional style, straight line type of thing down the side of it. Now, if you brought me, you know, like say a 1932, you know, Ford street rod that was fenderless and it had flames all over it. Now we're opening the doors to, you know, where we can get creative and, you know, start to do something with a car that, you know, was basically built as a custom car, you know. So, but if you brought me a stock original, you know, 32 Ford, I would put, you know, be inclined to put more of the straight line, you know, striping that was put on in a factory. So, you know, it's very interesting. You got to kind of read the vehicles, read the customers, and see what they want, you know.
Talking to Jeff Williams of the King of Paint about traditional sign painting, hand lettering, and more. He's been doing it for a good long while. He's based now in St. Francis, Wisconsin. Is there a job or is there a job or two, Jeff, that you think back on? Do you think it was a lot of fun to do or a challenge that was worth the effort, something that stands out in your career?
Yeah, I mean, actually, as far as I certainly have not felt like I've ever had a job. So I've been doing this for over 40 years, and I've never felt like I've had to go on to work, you know.
Nice.
So it's one of those things. But I guess I've had some very challenging jobs, and just recently here, actually last year, I did some bicycles for Harley Davidson. Actually, they made a limited run of some pedal bicycles. And there was, there was striping. You know, there was like 6 stripes on each wheel. And so I had to stripe these wheels. And that was a challenge, trying to put 6 stripes on a bicycle wheel. So, you know.
That sounds like fine detail work.
Yes, yes. It was very challenging. It kind of, you know, had me thinking and, you know, but we got the job done. I think we did like 35 bicycles. So I had, you know, 70 wheels to stripe.
Do you see a demand, a growing demand maybe for this kind of custom hand painted work these days?
Well, yes, I guess I see, you know, that there's always going to be something that's going to need to be hand done. And for instance, I get people that bring me like a vintage race car that they have restored or a vintage motorcycle. And, you know, basically they were hand done back in the day and a sticker just won't do. So, you know, but I get people coming from a further distance to have me do work for them, you know, versus back in the, you know, the day when I first started, you probably only had local people come. And now I get people that travel for hours to come to have me letter their motorcycle tank, you know, or whatever it may be.
Jeff, you said you don't think of yourself as working. Do you see yourself retiring someday, or is this something you just are going to keep doing as long as you can?
Well, I've been telling people that if they want something done, because they'll say, well, I want to get this done in the future. I says, well, you got between now and the time I'm dead to catch me, because I'm going to be doing it till I'm dead.
All right.
You know, I can't think of anything else to do.
Jeff, thanks for joining us. Thanks for sharing your work with us today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's Jeff Williams of the King of Paint. He's been practicing the craft of traditional sign painting since 1980. He does hand lettering, pinstriping, and gold leaf gilding at his shop based in St. Francis, Wisconsin. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Tyler Ditter with a story about a Wisconsin veteran's service in Iraq.
From his earliest memories, Ryan Arisman of Sun Prairie knew he wanted to be a part of the U.S. Armed Forces. He became a Marine and eventually served in Iraq. Arisman says his belief of treating others with respect was felt by those around him. Arisman's girlfriend, Treva Weatherell, interviewed him about his experiences as part of StoryCorps' Military Voices initiative.
Ryan Arisman, I'm 45 years old. I'm in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. I wanted to be in the military from my earliest memories. I joined Naval ROTC at the University of Wisconsin in the fall of 1993 as a freshman. And I got commissioned as a Marine Second Lieutenant in May 1997 and became an infantry officer several months later after basic school. The first time I deployed to Iraq, I checked in very late to a battalion, and I was what they called the Assistant Operations Officer. I was basically running, think of the equivalent of NASA Mission Control. There were days where I literally had three handsets next to my face talking to regiment and two different battalions at the same time on the net. That set me up for company command. I understood what it took to put everything together and keep it moving at a battalion level. So the second deployment, we deployed to Habaniya, Iraq, in the beginning of January 2007, and I commanded Lima Company, 3rd Battalion, 6th Marines. By this time in late 2006, early 2007, we were in kind of the height of the insurgency. IEDs, so roadside bombs all the time, RPG attacks, mortar attacks. But for the Marine Corps, Marines were living in villages among Iraqis in essentially leased houses. Some days were kinetic, be in gunfights, and some days were walking around talking to people. Often that all happened in the same hour. To prepare for that, the Marine Corps actually had contracted with this company that brought in all these Iraqis living in America and created simulated villages on base. There was training around understanding the culture and understanding how to interact when you're not in gunfight mode. The way we prepared, there was all of that. And then there's the discussions. I felt that if I'm taking 170 some guys to combat, I owe it to them to let them know where I stand and what I think. I said, and here's two things. We're going to leave every place we go better than we found it. And the other thing I said was, we're going to treat Iraqis with respect and dignity. They are not the enemy. The enemy lives among them. And the only way we're going to separate those out is by building relationships with the ones who would work with us.
What was the impact of treating Iraqis with respect and dignity?
By the end of our deployment, we went from an area that had IEDs on that road every day to nothing was going on. We had trained local Iraqi, for lack of a better term, they functioned as militia, so that they would have the power to fight Al-Qaeda. On my last day, my last patrol, we went down to Abu Hawa. I had lunch with Dr. Mustafa. Mustafa was a University of Baghdad professor whose family had spoken out against Al-Qaeda. As I understood it, Al-Qaeda insurgents broke into their family homes one night and killed almost every other male in his family while he still lived in Baghdad. And so Mustafa came back and became not only the caretaker of much of his extended family, but kind of the security leader of his village. And when I told him I was leaving, he pulled me aside with tears in his eyes. And he said, "Your Marines treat the fighters as brothers, and they treat the Iraqi people as friends. Because of you and your Marines, the people here have been able to turn away from Al-Qaeda." And I think that was probably a better indication of success than anything else anybody could have told me.
That was Ryan Arisman of Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. He shared his experience as part of StoryCorps' Military Voices Initiative, which is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Tyler Ditter.
Coming up, there's just a month of summer left if you're going on a summer road trip. What do you do to make the drive more fun? Call in now at 800-642-1234 with your favorite highway games, road snacks, listening, and more. That's 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll take your road trip fun advice coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, summertime is a season for road trips. And with the pandemic, driving became the safest way to get around, even if it meant driving a few counties or states over. After a few hours or maybe days of driving, the going can get tough. Your lower back and legs are stiff, sure, but the worst part might be the sheer mind-numbing boredom that can sometimes come with that road trip. When you consider the hours and hours of a big drive you have to get through, what do you do to keep your brain happy? We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Here's what we're looking for. Do you have a game that you play, maybe with family or friends on car trips? Favorite road snacks that help you get through? Do you make a special music playlist just for road trips, or do you have a mixtape or CD? Do you save up on podcast episodes, audiobooks on the road, or do it old school and turn on the radio and scan the dial? Call in at 800-642-1234 with your road trip favorites or maybe memories. That's 800-642-1234. Maybe you do a sing-along on your long road trips, like, say, John Candy and Steve Martin did on the bus ride to St. Louis in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
All right, who knows a tune here? Who wants to sing a tune? Who's got a song?
I got one.
You got one. Neil Page has got one.
Three coins in a fountain, each one seeking happiness. You know this, seeking happiness. Thrown by three hopeful lovers.
Flintstones, meet the Flintstones. They're the modern tonic family.
Keep it simple. Share your plane, train, or I guess just automobile pastime, your favorite game, sing along, or you name it. 800-642-1234 is the number to share. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to Nick now in Green Bay. Nick, hello.
First, I got to tell you, I love you. You're awesome. I love your show. I love
Thank
your
you.
You're
thank
amazing.
You. Thanks.
I'm a licensed amateur operator. So usually when we go on long road trips, I take an ATF radio with me and I make contacts all over the world. But right now with Cuba acting up, it's a little more difficult because they're blocking all the frequencies. So,
all right. What's the furthest way you've ever talked to someone, Nick? Because I know this ham radio, sometimes you get a long range.
The one that I'm the proudest the most about is I'm Irish. So I've got a contact from Ireland. That's my proudest one. We exchanged QFL cards, which is postcards, and I got the postcards sitting up on the wall.
Fantastic, Nick. Thanks so much for starting us off at 800-642-1234. Lisa Nalbandian, we asked around WPR. Lisa Nalbandian, a Southeast Regional Manager at WPR, says the old-fashioned license plate game sustained our family on a road trip to Colorado. Before the trip, Lisa says, I printed out USA maps for all of us. When we saw a state, we colored in the map. We played as a unified team and saw more than one Alaska license plate. Yeah, there's always Hawaii, though. You don't see those too often. It takes some doing. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you do to have fun on your drive? Elaine joins us next on a road trip, apparently driving through Wisconsin. Hello, Elaine.
Exactly. My son and I are on a road trip. And I will say, The snack we picked up was some cheese curds. So
nice.
We are enjoying Wisconsin cheese curds.
And what's, do you have a game? Yeah. Do you have a game?
Okay. Yes. This is, game is a different license plate game. One of us looks at a license plate, the letters on a license plate, and makes up a question beginning with the words begin with that letter. And then the next person has to come up with the next license plate with the answer. And I told the gal I talked to that I was playing it with my friend once, and she's very tall and thin. And the letters I saw were G-L-L. So I said, got long legs. And then her letters were N-Z-L. So she said, not that long.
Awesome. I love it. And thanks for the example. I get how the game works. Well, Elaine, enjoy the cheese curds and enjoy your drive through Wisconsin. Let's go to Mark now in Bloomer. We're taking your calls, by the way, about your favorite road trip snacks, games, listening activities, and more at 800-642-1234. Mark in Bloomer. Mark, hi.
Hi. I got two things that my family and I always do. They're both kind of goofy, but whatever. Anytime you see a yellow vehicle, and it's got to be a car, not a pickup semi or not a dump truck, if it's yellow and it's a car, you yell banana.
And you win if you're the first one to see it and yell banana, I'm guessing. Right, Mark?
No, you just, no, oh, there's a banana.
Okay.
Banana.
All right, that was one. What's your other one?
Wisconsin is not the only state with public radio. We travel nationwide, and I try and find the local public radio station and tune in.
Oh, fantastic. That's great to hear, Mark. Nothing goofy about that. The banana one I get is a little goofy, but sounds like good fun. We are, thanks a lot for that call. We're looking for your road trip activities in the car, the games you play on a road trip, the snacks you eat, the things you like to listen to. Still time for your call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Judith Marie Heise, WPR digital marketing manager, says we drive fairly regularly Madison to St. Louis to visit family, a 6 to 7 hour haul. Peanut M&Ms, dark chocolate if you can find them, eaten one at a time and two specific bites each. Slow playing them and analyzing the peanut inside each one. Whole peanut, half peanut, no peanut at all. And the nausea. After eating a lot of dark chocolate, peanut M&Ms give you something else to think about. Also, audiobooks, huge Terry Pratchett fans, Going Postal and Raising Steam, or the entire Tiffany Aching series streamed on Libby from the public library. Great, a lot of fun. I like to listen to audiobooks on long road trips, especially by myself. My car mates don't always share the same tastes in reading as I do. You can still join in at 800-642-1234. Kate Sullivan, institutional planner, WPM, says, David Sedaris' Me Talk Pretty one day. We listen to it. Can't miss laugh out loud favorite snacks. Snyder's sourdough hard pretzels dipped in whipped cream cheese that keeps well and generates fewer crumbs than most snacks. Yeah, the car crumbs can be a bummer. Still time for your call at 800-642-1234. Waiting for, we got a problem with our phone system. Let's see if we can do it. Let's see if we can take Susie in New Berlin. Susie, hi, can you hear me?
Hi.
Yay. What's your trip, Susie?
Well, both when I was a little kid and as, when my kids were little, one game my dad had was, maybe other people know this one, whenever you saw a horse on your side of the car, you know, on the farm on your side of the car, you got a point. If you saw a mule, you got 5 points. If you saw a white horse, you got 10 points. If you went past a cemetery on your side of the road, you lost all your points.
Oh, no.
They all died. Yeah. And we would do that for hours and hours. Even as an adult, when I was driving for my father, he would go, oh, a white horse. I got 10 extra points. You know, and we'd still kind of play it. But with my kids, we always played the ABC game when they were little, trying to find signs and things that had the letters in order in the alphabet. And then also numbers, and you can go as high as you want with numbers. And one thing that we found, it worked in the day and the night. The daytime, we were on our way to the Badlands, and you go through a period of time where you see more signs for wall drug than you will see of anything ever. And so we had the kids count how many wall drug signs they had on their side of the car. And
awesome.
It was like 42 to 43. And then one time we were driving at night through a horrible lightning storm. And they had to count how many lightning strikes. Ooh. On your kind of side of the car.
Well, Susie, thanks a lot for all those games. We'll leave it there. Thank you so much for all your calls. Keep sharing your road trip favorites. Email ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Some fun road stories there. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. It's the morning show with Kate Archer Kent. Tomorrow at 7, catch up on the big Olympic results and stories with a focus on women's events. Coming up, it's our look at the top stories in national politics. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.